Hello, this is The Money. I'm Richard Ady. And today we're talking cash. There's a lot of it about. 1.4 billion Australian banknotes are in circulation. It's worth around $70 billion. Of that $70 billion, 31.5 is in hundreds. Not that you see many of them. You'd be much more likely to if you were a criminal, because cash is king in the illicit economy. And that's one of the reasons why Ken Rogoff wants to get rid of it. Well, the big notes anyway. The Harvard professor is the author of The Curse of Cash.
On the one hand, I'm not against cash and for abolishing cash, but there's too many big bills floating around. A lot of the world's money supply is in very large denomination notes, like the 500 euro, it's more than 500 US dollars, the $100 bill, of course, the 1,000 Swiss franc note, and actually, really virtually every country in the world has surprisingly ton of cash floating around, and the central banks don't really know where much of it is.
Okay, well, how much cash are we talking about? In your country, how much is sitting around in cash?
Well, we don't know where it's sitting, but in our country, the United States, there's about $4,200 for every man, woman, and child. Yeah, Australia is maybe 60% of that, depending on what exchange rate you use. Of that $4,200, maybe 80% of it is in $100 bills, and a bunch of the rest is in $50 bills. If you look at Europe, more than 90% of the euro are in 50 euro and above, and so on across most countries in the world. And my contention, I've been writing about this for 20 years and researching it, is that a lot of it is used to facilitate crime of all sorts, of human trafficking, drug trafficking, extortion, racketeering, money laundering, of course, and also tax evasion. A surprisingly big part of these notes are used by people who are just hoarding cash in order to avoid detection by their revenue service.
Well, let's, I suppose, go further with that, because it seems to me, and this is obvious from reading the book, that it's not just taxes. I mean, if you deal in cash, you leave no trail. So that means you can avoid regulations more widely.
That is absolutely right. So we could be talking about environmental regulations. In the United States, we have a huge illegal immigration problem, and the employers pay in cash so that it doesn't get detected. And that's, of course, the magnet for the immigration. By the way, I favor immigration, but not that way. So yes, it has many roles. Now, of course, on the other hand, you know, some of it's good. We want to keep a certain degree of privacy. It's very important. But I just think it's out of kilter. You don't really need the big bills for what most people want to do.
All right. We'll get to problems and perhaps solutions later on. But I'm keen just to pursue this a little. I suppose what it means, if you're an employer and you're using cash, you can avoid paying the minimum wage. And as you say, especially in America, but in all countries where there is illegal immigration, this is a big driver of that, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, solving illegal immigration's a little more complicated than just getting rid of the big bills. But if you didn't have cash, you wouldn't have nearly the degree of illegal immigration. I mean, I've gotten letters from people who say, yeah, I've seen people paid in prepaid cards. But you can't do that on the scale that brings 11 million people to the United States. You can use prepaid cards, you can use bitcoins, you can give them silver coins, but that's not going to work nearly the same way. Cash is king. A lot of this is done in cash, paper currency.
And is there any kind of estimate of the tax that's going uncollected because cash makes it possible to not have documentation?
Well, there's a very good estimate of in the United States of how much taxes are not collected. It's about 15% of the total taxes. And the Internal Revenue Service estimates that it's very heavily biased towards cash-intensive businesses. That doesn't mean that suddenly if you got rid of all cash, which I don't even propose, that somehow everyone would pay their taxes. But it's much, much harder when there's no third-party detection. And in countries where the sales tax is more important than the income tax, particularly in Europe, tax evasion's much bigger even than in the United States. In countries in Europe, they're really attuned to this idea of trying to phase down cash, as I propose.
We're talking about trillions of dollars, really, aren't we, in lost revenue?
Worldwide, we are talking about trillions of dollars. So maybe in the United States, if you count federal and state and local, it's $700 billion. But it's more than that in Europe. So sure, the worldwide total just in the advanced countries is easily a couple trillion, $2 or $3 trillion. You're not going to get it all back by making it harder to use cash, but they're making it very easy to do with cash.
Mm. So I don't think anyone who maybe gets a discount from a plumber for paying cash thinks they're engaging in a criminal activity, though of course, technically they are. But what do we know about the role of cash in outright criminal activities, the stuff that we can all see is criminal?
We don't know as much as we'd like because the Justice Department in the United States doesn't really keep an adequate database. We do know that there are these frequent cases where they do a drug bust, they do a racketeering bust, even sometimes a corruption bust, and find huge amounts of cash, tens of millions of dollars, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars, usually mostly in large denomination notes. And, you know, I think in the public psyche, if you see somebody with a briefcase of $100 bills, which is about $1 million, you think something fishy is going on. That's not the way normal transactions happen. In Los Angeles, New York, Miami, certainly people do buy apartments, cars, guns with $100 bills, but it's usually dirty money getting laundered. And I think even the central banks and treasuries realize that, but they don't know what to do.
Yeah, it seems clear that the crimes that we are most concerned about, crimes run by organized criminals, so drug trade, human trafficking, political corruption, that cash is the key thing that makes it possible.
It's not the only thing that makes it possible. Corrupt people make it possible, but it makes it easier and you have more of it. And there's, you know, in the drug trade, about 80% of the transactions are in cash. Human trafficking, the estimates are less good, but more than half is in cash. And there are lots of ways to take bribes, but a lot of it's in cash. And the big bills make it a lot easier. It's very crude, but my basic point is that if you have $1 million in hundreds, it weighs 22 pounds, you can fit it in a briefcase. If you have to use $10 bills, and I propose getting there in another 10 or 20 years, it would be 220 pounds and take a giant suitcase. It'd make it harder to hoard, harder to hide, harder to port, harder to count. And I think it would be a very useful first step. If it's not enough, they could do more, but I think it would really do a lot.
I mean, I'm glad you said that because as we talk, I am thinking organized criminals, they are determined, enterprising, ruthless people. If you got rid of the large denomination bill, specifically the $100 bill in America, wouldn't these people find ways around this?
Well, not so easily. I mean, so we're talking over a period, my proposal suggests stripping down to the $10 bill and below. I'm willing to talk about the 20. I'm not quite sure where to draw the line, but I suggest at the 10. Yeah, they can use other things, but it's quite inconvenient. There's a reason that there's such a huge demand for these big bills. There's such a big demand for cash, and making it more difficult to use it, more difficult to hide, would, I think, strike quite a blow. I must say, the Internal Revenue Service in the United States often lists getting rid of big bills near the top of their dream list of what might help. Justice departments certainly talk about that. You know, I've certainly had correspondence or heard from law enforcement officials who see it as a big problem. Yes, there'll still be criminal activity. We had criminal activity 3,000 years ago before they even had coins. But you don't want the government to be making it easier. And it may all sound very primitive. And I do get this response like, oh, they'll just use Bitcoin. That's a cryptocurrency.
It's very naive.
Yes, activity goes there, but it's a tiny fraction of what's in cash. You can't take it to the store. You can't so easily take it to the bank. Any other thing that they use besides cash just doesn't have the breadth, the liquidity, like you can use it anywhere. And of course, other things are going to pop up. But as long as the government is diligent, it will keep whacking them down. And of course, I think in the long run, we're going to be using cash less in the legal society. There's no doubt. All the trends are pointing that way, including in Australia. And in another 10 to 15 years, you'll be seeing very few transactions over $50 or $100 in cash. That's already the case in the United States, where checks, electronic transfers, debit cards, credit cards, and soon smartphones are all used more than cash.
All right. We've talked a little about tax evasion. We've talked a bit about criminality. But in fact, there are a whole other set of reasons connected with central banks that you think that we should be phasing out, especially the larger denomination bills. Now, what are they?
There are other reasons. I think the tax evasion and the crime is enough reason to get rid of the big bills. But if we do that, and I recommend doing it very slowly over a long time because you just don't know what the unintended consequences are, if we do that, it will be a big step towards central banks being able to use emergency negative interest rate policy if and when we ever have a financial crisis in the future. I do not recommend this anytime soon. There are other obstacles having to do with tax laws, legal changes that are needed, market institutions. But in Japan and Europe, where they've tiptoed into this territory of charging negative interest rates for short-term deposits, they've managed to negotiate this pretty easily. So why does paper currency matter? Because if they tried to cut interest rates a lot, and a lot of studies show that during the financial crisis, the Fed, the European Central Bank, and others would have liked to sharply drop interest rates below zero in order to re-energize employment, pick up inflation. If they were to try that, people would bail out into big bills. Now, my plan, by the way, gives an exclusion for small savers and depositors, but we're talking about pension funds, insurance companies, big banks, and right now it would just create chaos. This is not something to do all the time. Negative interest rate policy is hopefully something we don't need. But with the very low level of interest rates right now, the very low level of inflation, if there is another deep recession, central banks are going to be wishing they could do it.
We should just underline at this point, I think, Kenneth, that the reason for this is that if you go into negative interest rates, and I'll ask you a bit more about that in a moment, cash works as an alternative because it's zero interest, and zero interest is better than negative interest.
Exactly. It's not easy. If you're hoarding a couple thousand dollars, you can hide it anywhere. It's no big deal. If you're an insurance company, a pension fund, and you're talking about taking out $10 billion, $5 billion, and that's what we're talking about here, that's not so easy. I mean, you need a vault, you need insurance. The vault has to be humidity controlled. It has to be temperature controlled. It's not cheap to hoard big amounts of cash. But if they think that interest rates are going to be negative, and they're going to be very negative for a long time, it will happen, and it creates chaos. It's, first of all, if everybody's pulling their money out of the financial system, the negative interest rate policy will fail to bring down interest rates. And think about the problems for criminal justice systems, all the robberies, the chaos. It would be a pretty ugly situation. So no one wants to see that. If you got rid of the big bills, the cost would be so prohibitive unless we saw sort of crazy negative interest rates, which we won't. I think it pretty much rules out the problem.
This is The Money on RN, and the man you're hearing from is Harvard economics professor Ken Rogoff. Ken, the negative interest rates, they're still essentially experimental, aren't they?
Well, yes and no. I would say within the academic community, it has become to be regarded as the future. If we continue to have financial crises, we continue to have these episodes of very low interest rates. On the other hand, you're absolutely right. To have something that works on a blackboard and work in practice is not the same thing. And there are a lot of things that need to be done, and really most countries have not, and it would take time. For example, in the U.S., checks don't have any expiration dates. So there's a negative interest rate and you write me a check. What if I sit on it so that you're the one taking, you know, paying the tax on your account? There are all these games, but they're pretty easily solved. But you do need to think through them. Yes, it's an experimental policy, but it's not nearly as experimental as some of the things they're doing. So because they can't have negative interest rates, which I think they would like to, they do all this stuff of quantitative easing. If you don't know what it is, you probably don't want to, but it's where the central banks buy massive amounts of government long-term debt using very short-term central bank debt to try to bring down interest rates. It has not been very effective. Nobody takes it seriously as being an alternative to normal monetary policy. And worse yet, there are all these very, let's just say, wacko ideas out there about what should be done if interest rate policy is paralyzed. Barry Eichengreen at University of California, Berkeley says, well, protectionism might not be so bad because it makes us pay more for everything, and that brings up inflation. And there's just lots of examples like this. And I think if central banks, you know, at least had the tool, if they needed it, it would clear the air of some of these other ideas, which for lots of reasons are suspicious, but I think they would just disappear if you cleaned up this problem.
Well, we have other objections, I suppose. One of them is that central banks at the moment make money out of their monopoly on currency.
Well, indeed they do. It's a big profit center. But the point of my work is that if you look at the government as a whole, they're getting killed on tax evasion, which is an order of magnitude more than they're making in these quote-unquote profits on money. And we haven't even mentioned facilitating crime and the cost to the public, the costs of law enforcement, all the, you know, costs of living in a society like that. So I think it is very narrow-minded to view this as a profit center, although indeed they do. And I think a lot of people, when I first talked about this 20 years ago, said, oh, well, this is crazy. Why would you want to do that? Now, treasuries all over the world are saying, you know, we're really having trouble raising revenues because of tax evasion. The more we raise tax rates, the more evasion there is. Terrorism, we haven't mentioned. That was the reason that they eliminating the 500 euro note after the Paris attacks in which the big notes were used. Justice departments are very sympathetic to the idea. And of course, central banks, there's much more interest in it now. Also, paper currency is going away with or without the treasuries and central banks taking it away. People are using it less. So I think we'll reach a tipping point sometime in the next 5 to 10 years where this moves very quickly. There are countries such as Sweden, Norway, Finland, Denmark, which are moving much faster towards being what I call less cash societies. Not no cash, that's a mistake, but countries which rely less on cash.
Can I just unpack a few more of the objections? So someone listening now might be thinking, well, hang on. I like to use the occasional big note. Cash is easy. Everyone knows what it is. It's accepted it almost everywhere. If you get rid of those, you lose something that we've had for as long as anyone can remember.
Well, the question's whether we really in this day and age need the big notes anymore. And frankly, there are a lot of surveys, including of Australia, that find they're not used very much by ordinary people. Even the Germans, who profess to love cash, you know, maybe have a few hundred euro in counting maybe 100 on their person, some in the house, but they're, you know, more than 3,000 euro per person in the eurozone as a whole. The Americans, the surveys find that, yeah, 5% of people use a $100 bill once a year, but they're 34 of them for every man, woman, and child in the United States. So it's a question of proportion. There are very few things you're using the $100 bill for you couldn't use 20s for. I said, I'll listen to whether it's 20s or 10s or where to draw the line, but I think the 100s and the 50s are pretty clear that they do more harm than good.
What about privacy, Kenneth? I mean, when you pay using cash for most things, you're anonymous. Your bank doesn't know what you're doing with it. The government doesn't know. People feel comfortable with that.
Well, privacy is super important. Of course, it's being stripped away in every conceivable direction at the moment, at least in the United States. But you can do a lot with smaller bills. I mean, what are we talking about that you need to do on a routine basis? It is easier to carry around $1,000 as 10 hundreds, as in having the equivalent amount in tens and twenties. But, you know, how often are you doing that? The evidence is very little. And if you feel like it, it's not very hard to have $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 if this is something you're just doing once in a while, even $100,000. If you're telling me you're doing this all the time, I'm pretty suspicious of what you're calling privacy. And certainly a lot of the pushback I get and angry email come from people who say, you're going to ruin my business. I don't know what business they're talking about. I don't think I should have to pay taxes. That's not fair. The government will waste the money. I'll just have to pay taxes if you do this, etc. I get a lot of pushback, by the way, in the U.S. from the gun lobby, thinking it's going to be easier for the government to enforce gun registration and background checking laws if you can't pay in cash. And I'm sorry, but it's really a question of scale. I think you can have small bills. It's not really get in the way for most of us. And again, we're talking about 10 or 15 years from now. Do you really think you'll be using as much cash?
I think reading through the book, it's actually fairly compelling. I think that this is mostly fine for a lot of people, and especially if you're reasonably comfortably off. But if you're poor, cash is probably more important. Cash is probably more the thing you use. Won't getting rid of cash disadvantage people who are already disadvantaged?
Well, first of all, the poor are not so much using the $100 and $50 bills, at least according to all the surveys. But a very important part of my plan is financial inclusion, giving free debit cards to low-income people. They've done that in the Scandinavian countries, and there are a number of other countries like the UK that are looking very hard at it. So a simple way to do it is the people who don't have debit cards tend to be ones that get supported by the government. So you create debit accounts, you give them their money that way. The government saves a lot of money that, you know, at least defrays some of the cost. Giving people free debit cards is very low cost. I think financial inclusion is very important. I think it's going to happen regardless. I think one wants to be careful not to overstate that as essential. To me, it's very important. I feel very strongly about it. But I don't think the $100 bills are for the poor. When I talk to people, I think, from all walks of life, and the ones that tell me they're using the hundreds are wealthier people paying their help in hundreds because they don't want to pay taxes and they're not paying their Social Security old age benefits, people paying their yoga instructors, et cetera.
You've mentioned that some countries, particularly the Scandinavian countries, are looking hard at things like negative interest rates. Are they further down the track in terms of getting rid of cash more generally as well?
Well, the Scandinavian countries are where we're going to be in 10 years, one way or the other. It's not just government policy. They're just more advanced in their technology. So Sweden, under 5% of the value of all purchases is in cash. It's similar in Finland and Norway. There are parts of Sweden, Finland, Norway, Denmark, where you have to travel 100 kilometers to find a machine that gives cash. And this is coming from many parts of society. Curiously, one of the things that sparked it in Sweden was there was a rash of very violent bank robberies, almost like out of a James Bond movie. And the Swedish Bank Tellers Union, went in an uproar and said, this has to stop. And as a result, they have stripped cash entirely out of more than half, maybe more than three quarters of Swedish banks. They don't even have ATM machines. There's no cash. And, they've gotten used to it. At first, they said old people won't adjust, but they've actually adjusted faster than young people. A lot of the objections, what if I can't remember my PIN, my code on my debit card? they've found easy solutions to. Even India, by the way, has gone to biometric identification for over 900 million people now who therefore are eligible for debit accounts in India. So this is being widely done. It's going to happen with or without my plan.
You're not talking about an overnight change, are you? If you could convince all the powers that be in the United States tomorrow, or let's be realistic, after you've sorted out who's going to be in charge of your country, how long would it take to actually, would you say this should take to implement?
I would like to see it done very slowly, let's say 10 to 20 years, call it 15. You first phase out the big bills, the 150s, and you work on the financial inclusion, and then you also work on all the changes you need to pave the way for negative interest rates, which is not an essential part of the plan. And then you eventually take away the 20s if you seem on track. But I think all of these things need to be done slowly, because whenever we make big changes, there are unintended consequences, there are things you didn't see coming. And I just don't see any reason to rush about it. I think that would be a mistake. And, you know, in fact, I think the central banks that have rushed to use negative interest rate policy maybe haven't paved the way enough. But Sweden's done this, you know, fairly slowly. They've had, think of it as a 20-year program that they've been doing it. And we can learn a lot from these experiences. But I have to say, they seem to have gone fairly smoothly. And I expect we'll be seeing this in more of Europe. There are countries like Greece that are looking very hard at this, because you talk about tax evasion, they're in the Olympics of tax evasion, and a lot of it's in cash, but also Portugal, Spain, and they don't all do it the same way, but they try to find ways to make it harder to pay big amounts in cash, and they're finding tax revenues go up.
So what do you think's going to happen next in a country like America with this? Because as you've mentioned, you've been talking about this on and off for a couple of decades now.
Well, I think when I wrote my first paper 20 years ago, I was 30 years ahead of my time, and I'm hoping this is only 10 years. I mean, if I thought this was going to happen tomorrow, I wouldn't write a book about it. I mean, that would mean everyone had already decided it was in place. I'm just looking at the trends, looking at the way things are going. I think what will happen is twofold. First, you will reach a tipping point where cash just gets so unimportant in the legal economy that it really doesn't take much to persuade people that you ought to phase it back. A second thing is that just as terrorist attacks catalyzed the Europeans taking a big first step, you know, there could be something like that in the United States also.
Kenneth, it's been really interesting to have you on. Thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for your interest.
Professor Ken Rogoff is at Harvard University. He's the author of The Curse of Cash. You'll find details on The Money's homepage at abc.net.au/rn. Next week on the show, the rise of bespoke for everyone. Sort of. The program is produced by Kate Piercy, our sound engineer is Jennifer Parsonage, and I'm Richard Ady.